What's happening, world? It's Kira and Ben back again. And this week we are presenting Grindhouse. We are covering the 2007 Grindhouse, which featured the films Death Proof by Quentin Tarantino and Planet Terror by Robert Rodriguez. Now, I had suggested these films because I think they're very fun. I think they're very silly. It was interesting. I hadn't rewatched them in, I would say, about like 5 years. So rewatching it always, as I talk about with like an older lens, is always crazy. But speaking off camera, you hadn't seen these before.
No, I didn't. And I was watching it going, what the hell does Kira have me watching?
Now, when you were watching them, did you watch them on Stars or did you have to rent them?
Tubi.
Tubi? Okay. Tubi. So in front of Planet Terror, was there a trailer that played?
Machete.
Okay. So fantastic. Because sometimes it's included in some versions, and there's actually four other trailers that were released with Grindhouse that are not included in the theatrical, in the streaming versions. I bet you could pay for a version. Did you see any of the other trailers?
No, just the machete.
Just the machete. Okay. So this is going to be really fun. This is going to be kind of a long, kind of crazy episode. I'm going to bounce around a lot because I think there's a lot to cover in both the films. I'll start with the trailers just to get them out of the way because I think they're really cool. So Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez had this idea to obviously make two double feature films, and they're obviously paying homage to that like 60s, 70s exploitation kind of films, those like kind of over the top, overly sexual, pulpy, bad films. Like, they're supposed to be bad. But like, it's supposed to be bad. Like, the dialogue's supposed to be cheesy. The women are supposed to look like, I think that, are they in a porno? Are they in a movie? Can you tell?
No, I actually couldn't. I was kind of like, whoa, what's going on here? It was kind of racy, but yeah, it was good.
It was incredibly racy. So they had this idea to do these films. And then they were thinking, because during when whoever has gone to a drive-in movie before, as you have, they always play trailers and they have little adverts in between the two movies. So what they had decided to do was film fake trailers for these movies. So Robert Rodriguez's contribution was obviously Machete. Those Rodriguez fans, as you know, he actually created that into a feature-length film starring Danny Trejo.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good, too.
It's so good. And then did you see Machete Kills?
No, I did not.
It's so good, too.
All right, I have to watch that.
I am a big Robert Rodriguez fan. The Faculty, have you seen that?
I did see The Faculty.
So good,
that's
right?
That's really good, yes.
And then I think what he's most famous for, Spy Kids.
Yeah, Spy Kids is great, too. So, yeah, yep. So, yep, I got to see Machete the Kills. That sounds good now.
It is. So, Robert Rodriguez creates the Machete trailer, and then Quentin Tarantino's talking to his friends. He's talking at Edgar Wright. He's talking at Robert Rodriguez. He's talking at Rob Zombie. And there's one other person whose name I will look up. And he's talking to all of them, and they love this idea of making these trailers. So they're all like, okay, can we make our own trailers? And then they do. So it's actually very interesting because, as we said, Robert Rodriguez's Machete was created into a film. Rob Zombie's Werewolf Women of the SS, not created into a film. Edgar Wright's Don't, not created into a film. But Eli Roth's Thanksgiving, created into a film.
Yes, and it was good.
And it was good. Yeah. And it was fun. And then we have Hobo with a Shotgun, which was also a real movie.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that either.
Oh, really? That's by Jason Eisner?
No, sounds weird.
Yeah, it's about a homeless vigilante.
I could see it.
So it's cool. So I thought it was really interesting that from these like fake trailers and from this like one little idea, they actually created all these movies. And I thought it was really cool to see people come together. Funny enough, Eli Roth, who was the director of Thanksgiving, actually also starred in Death Proof. He was one of the boys in the beginning.
Oh, that was good. I liked Death Proof. I thought it was good.
Did you like Death Proof more than Planet Terror?
I liked Death Proof, and I thought both of them had different qualities that I liked a lot. Like, the Planet Terror was really funny. Like, it was just so comical. And Death Proof was good. I mean, they were both good.
They're both different. They're both good in their own ways because I think they're both two very different styles of film, even though they are both in the same genre. I think what's interesting, too, is Death Proof, during the showings of these films, Death Proof played first, and then Planet Terror played second. No, Planet Terror played first, and Death Proof played second. But Death Proof takes place before Planet Terror because they shout out Jungle Julia on the radio. R.I.P. Jungle Julia.
I got a question. Have you seen Death Race at all?
I have seen Death Race.
Didn't it remind you a little bit of Death Race?
At the end, the final scene, right? Yes, absolutely, yes. It did. But it was so good. Okay, so I think we should start with Planet Terror, just because in the double feature, that's the one that you should watch first. That's the one that they presented first, I should say. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, let's go.
Okay, so diving into Planet Terror, this is Robert Rodriguez's film. We've already listed some of our favorite Robert Rodriguez films. So he actually came up with this idea when he was filming The Faculty. He was talking to Elijah Wood and Josh Hartnett. And he was like, you know, zombie movies are dead, but I think they're going to make a comeback. So this is his kind of play on like this horror comedy zombie movie. So it starts in Austin, Texas. And we see this very just like sad stripper, sad go-go dancer. Cherry is a go-go dancer. And she's dancing and crying. And she's so beautiful. And it's played by the ever lovely Rose McGowan. And I would be remiss if I did not mention this. Both these films are produced by the Weinstein Company, Gut Punch. Really tough to see that logo come up. But Rose McGowan was actually one of the first women to speak out against Harvey Weinstein. So I hope no atrocities happened to her on this movie set, because we are talking about this movie today.
Yeah. I didn't even realize that. That's terrible. That's real terrible.
It's really sad. She is obviously a strong, beautiful soldier. All the women who've spoken out against Harvey Weinstein are brave. Not the road I want to go down. We're going to get back into Planet Terror, but
fun.
But I would be doing a disservice to all the women if I did not mention it. So back to Planet Terror. Rose McGowan, she is a sad go-go dancer, and she's going to leave her club. She's going to find herself and leave her club. And as she does this, she ends up at it's not like an abandoned barbecue shop. It's just barbecue restaurants. Just no one's there besides JT.
Yeah, it lost its luster, he says.
Yeah.
People went to other places, so.
And his brother is his landlord, and also his brother, and he keeps raising his rent because he won't share the barbecue. Okay, so it's very funny, but like there are some tender moments. Two big jump scares in this movie. Fergie's in it for a little bit of time from the Black Eyed Peas, and then Bruce Willis.
Yeah, I was shocked when I saw Bruce Willis. I was like, what? Oh, Bruce Willis. Yeah, but he's not in it long.
He's not in it long. So the main story, how do these zombies come to be? There's a biochemist who is who's making an anti... I don't know. The science in this movie doesn't make sense, so it's hard to explain. It's basically just this poisonous gas that if you get exposed to it, you turn into a zombie. And you get these really gross boils, and parts of your body's just deform and...
Pussy,
yeah, that's a good word. And you get kind of just, like, blobby. I don't know, but, like, fast and strong. It's very funny. The violence in this one, I think, is quite comical. Love the use of practical effects. We always say practical is better than CGI.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You can tell, like, the difference.
No, you can. And I think it gives it more of that, like, 1960s, like, 1970s feel. So we see that they are exposed. So he's trying to... The main guy that's selling it, he's so funny. He's like this like intimidating kind of businessman, but he's a chemist, but also a businessman. And he had some funny lines about being like, science is my first love, but like money and capitalism is my second. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. It's kind of realistic.
And it is realistic. He's like, I'm a scientist first, but I do need to make money. And I was like, true. So he gets double crossed because some people escape that have the, that are infected. And his way of doing that is having people cut his enemy's balls off, and then he keeps them in a jar. And the weird part is that he saved them after the jar broke.
You ever see Return of the Living Dead?
I did.
When the gas breaks and it goes into the atmosphere. That's what it reminded me of.
I think that was like what it was supposed to. I think it paid like perfect homage to that. Because like, so our biochemist shoots the gas tanks. And as Ben was saying, it goes into the air, similar to Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah, and it was really cool, like because it like brought back nostalgia for me, because like, oh, I understand this.
And I thought the green was cool, and I thought then like how the rest of the film had this like green hue to it. I thought that looked really cool. One thing I like about this film, and it does it, I think, and it plays into it way more than how Tarantino does it in Death Proof, but its use of like the feel of like camera footage and like having that old style film, like having the film breaks and the light breaks and like the kind of like crackly like 35mm. I don't know. I thought that was very fun, and I like that style choice.
Yeah, like when Cherry's about to have sex with her boyfriend, and then it breaks. Like,
it breaks.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, sorry, production errors. You know, it was funny. I was like, oh, I can remember this stuff.
Yeah, and then my favorite part is when it's like missing reel, and then it feels like 20 minutes of the movie is gone by. Like things are like getting like wrapped up. Like there's character resolution, and I'm like, oh, I thought we were just missing a sex scene. It's actually very funny. I think it's like Ben was saying, it's just like these mistakes used to happen, like these things would happen, and it's just kind of like funny and pulpy, and you just kind of go along with it. So now people are infected. We have the storyline of Cherry, our dancer. She runs into her ex-boyfriend, Ray, who's the silent, mysterious type, and they have some history, but it looks like she's running away and he's running away, and they're no good for each other, but they're in love and I, well, when we get to the end, I'll say what I want to say, but what did you think of Cherry and Ray?
So I was confused because of how it like all went about. Like she's at the barbecue place and he's like walks over and talks to her, and he's like, and then you find out they know each other and they were in love, and you know, the whole jacket thing. And I was like, oh, okay. And then like, when he turned into like this ninja superhero, I was like, what the hell is going on here? I'm like, I don't get this.
I think I know, right? It's so funny. And I think that's like in that missing reel part when the guy gets like shot and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, whatever, da da da. So the movie has it implied that, and it kind of implies it in the beginning when he opens up like the hood of his car and he just like whips out guns and he's like, let's go. And it's like, this is a tow truck. But he is like it feels like he's like a special forces, like Green Beret, like Black Ops, like Ben was saying, ninja. Like when he puts on the gloves and just starts stabbing everyone, it's so funny. But for some reason, the cops hate him because, I don't know, he got in trouble like one time for having guns. So they're like, they can't give him a gun. And I thought that was funny. The cop that kept shooting everyone else that was not a zombie, so funny. There's just complete embarrassment of the police force, which I love to see in film.
Yeah, I thought it was funny when he passed out all the badges and he's like, and no one shoot me. And he, like, he ends up getting shot by the guy.
And then he ends up getting shot. And he goes, Tolo, I can't believe it was you who shot me, you dumbass. Oh my God, so funny. So we find out that the police sheriff and JT are brothers. We find out that Cherry and Ray know each other. And then we have another storyline of Doctor and Dr. Bone. And this is played by Josh Brolin. And I know who this girl is, but she has like blonde hair and massive eyes. She's been in so many things. But so it is about these two people and their son, Tony. And they are night doctors and they work together. Well, she seems like an anesthesiologist nurse and he's a doctor. And they work at this hospital, but she's leaving him. And we don't know with who, but she's leaving him. And Tony's coming with her. So they get to the hospital and they start seeing all these like infected people from the gas leak at the military base. And we find out that she's leaving him and he and her have this like weird tension. It's like, is he a nice guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he a good guy? What was your, I mean, he is a bad guy. He is a villain. But what was your kind of impression of him, Ben?
I couldn't really read it until like, he showed his true colors, because I was like, I don't understand. Because like when he's talking to his son, he's like, you believe her? And he's like, no. And he's like, me either. So I didn't know what was going on. I was like, all right, something's clearly up with this, but what?
Yeah. And like he kind of had those like suspicious looks and like aggressive, like, oh, not, I don't want like overbearing like tendencies. I don't know. He's very menacing. That's the word I want. Like big and menacing in this. I think Josh Brolin was a really good casting. So they're starting to like look at all these things. Someone has like a bite, and the bite, it looks like it's 14 days old because it's turning gangrenous. But he's like, that's not true. So then they have to cut it off. And then I thought that part was very funny. We'll get to that when the ultra violence, as I like to say, happens, the violent montage happens. We see, so when Fergie gets first introduced, I want to talk about the, this story is crazy. I'm going to sum it up because I want to talk about a lot of things, and I think I'm getting a little rambly in bed. I'm so sorry. So,
we good.
So to like basically summarize the story, you have all these different people, and they have to come together to fight zombies, right? And there's going to be nuances within that, but I want to kind of break down some of the female characters as we talk about the story, because the character of Fergie, I think, is incredibly interesting, even though she's on screen for, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah, she's not there long.
She's not there long. But we first meet Fergie. So Cherry is walking from her go-go club to, I don't know, anywhere, because she gets, her car breaks down and she gets glass in her leg and she's like walking for miles, and then she finds JT's and she's gonna like clean herself up and get and like relax. And we meet Fergie. Now Fergie and JT have this interaction where Fergie's being very hot. I mean, this movie, if you like hot women, I would say watch this movie.
Oh yeah, there was a bunch.
I mean, every single woman in this movie is hot. So we have like
Even the twins.
Yeah. So, did you know that the twins were in Death Proof too?
No, I didn't even know there was a Death Proof too.
No, Death Proof as well.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I didn't know. Okay. Okay. I'm so sorry. Yeah. So, yes. So, watch this movie if you love hot women. So, Fergie comes out and she's like, I don't know what I imagine 13-year-old boys to imagine when they think of their dream girl, right? Hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's hot.
Big boobies. Leather jacket, long hair, knows about cars, is fixing her own car, doesn't need anybody. She's very like, she's very assertive, right? And she's very tough, and she's very knowledgeable in this first scene that we see, correct?
Oh, 100%. Like, she's like, yeah, it's the radiator, but it's not the radiator, it's just overheating and I can just fix it with water. And like, she's really like, you know, down to like, I know what's going on.
Yeah. She knows what she's like. She's like smart. And then we see she's driving, like later on she's driving and her car breaks down again and she touches it and it's like, I don't know, wrong. I don't know anything about cars. And then she just flips, like 100% flips, and is like wailing and like running through the streets, like trying to get someone to pull over, and she like can't. And it's like, I don't understand like why the switch flip, dude. It felt like such an odd character choice for me.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because she got out the car and then like it's like she heard something like, and she looks around and then all of a sudden she becomes this, from this strong person to this terrified woman. Maybe it's just like stereotypical 70s, 80s.
And it is. It's like, oh, a woman in distress like loses all her facilities and just is hysterical and like can't get a grip. And like and I understand why they did it, but it's such an interesting that they did it with her character specifically, because they did not do it with Cherry's character and they did not do it with the wife's character. And I forget her name.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was showing like the different, like how people can change into something that they're not used to being.
True, true.
So that could be it too, you know, like a metamorphosis, and like she metamorphosed into a scared person and the other one's metamorphosed into, strong-willed women.
Yeah. I mean, well, I would say Cherry and Dakota. Dakota is Josh Brolin's wife's name. I had to look it up. I'm so sorry. I would say Cherry and Dakota were pretty strong the whole time because they never like stopped in their convictions. But I don't know. I go back and forth.
See, I don't know, because her boyfriend told her to be the person she always was meant to be and be strong. And because she's always indecisive, he's like, what about being that doctor? And she's like, I'm not going to be a doctor. And he's like, what about being, and then she's going to be a stand-up comic. And then she's like, I can't be a stand-up comic, I lost my leg. And then, you know, he's like, why don't you just be the person you're meant to be? And then she becomes this strong, independent person.
True. But I think she was, yes, but I think she also always had a little bit of that, because she was like, she left him, she does her own things. And yes, she lets her own insecurities get in the way. And then she like obviously shed that. But I would say that she was strong all the time, where it made Fergie's character seem like she was strong, and then, or not like strong, but like capable, and then just like completely stripped her of that.
Yeah, I was looking at her more like she was strong, but she never took it all the way. Like, she always wanted to be, like, a strong person, like, always wanted to do these things, but something always held her back, and maybe this released her from being held back.
Cherry, right?
Yes, Cherry, not Fergie.
Fergie, okay. Yeah, and I can see that, because now she's, like, uninhibited, and, like, it's the end of the world, and... I mean, when we talk about how her story ends, it's going to be very funny. So, Fergie's character dies. She gets her brain ripped out and eaten and just annihilated. So, pretty sad ending for the damsel in distress. But I guess if you're a damsel in distress, that's what happens to you. So, we get to the hospital. Josh Brolin recognizes Fergie, and he like makes this like huge deal and like makes Dakota come down, and Dakota comes down and she has like obviously a very like big attack, like a panic attack about it, and she runs away. Josh Brolin then confronts her, and this is where I think when you're talking about like his true colors coming out, he starts threatening her. He numbs her hands so she can't use them, and it turns out that Fergie's character was actually who Dakota was leaving Josh Brolin for.
Yeah, her ex-lover.
Her ex-lover. And he goes, I didn't think... Like, he was like, oh, you're lying to me. You're cheating, whatever. And she's like, you're scaring me. So then, in a scene that I found hilarious. So we're in this very tense moment between husband and wife. And he's about to stab her in the eye with something that will kill her. And then he's like, it's like very like tense music. And then the door opens and they're like, hey, doc, like we need you. And he's like, okay, be right there. And then just is so calm and so chill. And I thought it was very funny.
It was funny.
I like that. Just
he's like, you got to see this. And yeah. He's like, yeah, I'll be right there.
I'll be right there. I always think that like juxtaposition is very interesting and very fun. And I think it breaks up the comedy in a way that's interesting. And then obviously she escapes. He does not get to kill her. He gets turned into a zombie because now there's so many infected people there. And for some reason, the sheriff and everyone's like, okay, let's go to JT's because like that's where he knows his brother is. So they're all rounded up and they all have to get to the military base now. So they round up this huge convoy. The babysitting twins are there. Dakota's there. Oh, so did you know that there's an alternate version of this film?
I did not.
Okay, so I haven't seen it, obviously. I've just seen this version. But there was another way that the scene was filmed where Tony did not shoot himself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And then everyone was like, then why did you keep it if you obviously had one where like he's like not dead? And then Robert Rodriguez says, well, it's a horror movie. It's supposed to be horrifying. And I guess a kid shooting himself in the face is horrifying.
Yeah, it was pretty. I was like, wow.
I know. It was kind of like brutal.
Yeah, it was like it's, but especially like growing up at a time when like a lot of kids did actually shoot themselves, yeah. Going into like their parents' drawers and getting the guns. And, you know, I actually like had that happen a lot in my life, like watching television and seeing like a lot of kid shot himself. And then like the kids' safes that they came out with like for guns, and then like they just like gave the codes to their kids. I'm like, what are you doing?
That's like that ruins the whole point of the safe. That's ridiculous. So I want to talk a little bit about the character of Dakota, and let's talk about Dakota. We can talk about her because she always seems incredibly strong-willed. So that's the thing about these women is like they're hot, but they're also smart. So it's kind of funny. Also, I don't know if you noticed, for a movie that kind of hates women, and I want to be very clear in how I talk about this, because I know that the people that created this, I know Robert Rodriguez does not hate women, and that's not what I'm saying, because I know he was doing it in a very distinctive style. But the way that this movie is filmed is so disgusting in parts about how it focuses on the gaze of women and how it views women. It views women as either two things, damsel in distress and stupid, or hot with a gun.
Yeah, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s stereotypes.
Yeah, like that's actually all you can be. Two of the funniest characters that don't get a lot of screen time are babysitting twins. And I want to get back to them. Let's finish out with Dakota. But so Dakota's very smart. She is orchestrating leaving her husband. She is a anesthesiologist, I'm going to say. She manages to have no use of her hands, but she is able to escape a room, start a car, pick up her son, and then drive to her father's house. crazy.
Yeah, it was like watching her try and do all this is hysterical. If you watch it, like she's trying to put the keys in with her teeth, and like it's just like it's raw determination at its finest.
At its finest, and she is so incredible in these scenes. She's so fun. And then we see her husband come. We see her go to her dad's, swarming with like a swarm of zombies behind her. The dad was in both films. Earl Brown.
Yeah, the cop.
The cop, yeah. The old man cop. So we see him in both films as well. So she leaves Tony in the car. And she goes, if you see anyone but me, shoot. And then obviously he's a 5-year-old with a gun. Kills himself.
Yeah, things you don't do.
So then she has a panic attack, and then she's like carrying his dead body with him. And one thing that I think is interesting, and I don't know if they do this because they don't know how to give a female emotional depth or like change her behavior. So we see Dakota very distraught, cradling her dead son, pretending like he's still alive, maybe convincing herself that he is still alive. Kind of like what-if-ing and just like really holding him. And then we have our missing reel. And then she comes back and she's like, Tony's gone. Tony's body's gone. And she's like in fight mode and she's ready to go. So it's like, where did that change happen?
I have no idea. Like, it's definitely cut out. Have you ever seen Cujo?
Oh my God, I have seen Cujo.
So like, it reminded me of the end of Cujo when the kid has the attack and then the mother loses it and like decides like, you know, I'm taking this dog out.
Yeah.
In the book, the kid actually dies.
Really?
Yes, he dies, and then the mother loses it and does it. I think it was like they didn't do that.
Because Cujo kills him?
No, he dies because of the heat and everything. He has the asthma and everything. Oh. He just dies in the car from like not being able to breathe. But I guess because like it was a movie and they didn't want to do that, you know, you can't really have the kid die in the movie. It would have affected people worse. Like mm-hmm. now they do it all the time.
I know.
Yeah, but I think that's why they didn't do it. And in this one, they did.
They did.
Yeah. Oh, 100% they did.
Robert Rodriguez was like, fuck them kids. Yeah. And then made Spy Kids. I think he did it as penance, maybe. No, I'm just kidding. I think that was really interesting for Dakota's character is that we don't see this actual development of like her being a grieving mother to being this like badass. I mean, she was a badass all along. We see it in her determination, but I thought that was really interesting that they cut that that out. Interesting enough, there is a scene where Cherry and Dakota are talking in captivity because they get captured by Bruce Willis's mutant army, and we get introduced to Quentin Tarantino playing his favorite role, rapist, and I can't wait to talk about that. But in the scene where they are tied up, do you know it actually passes the Bechdel test, which I thought was insane. I'm watching this pass and I go, the Planet Terror passes the Bechdel test out of all the tests it could pass.
No, I did not know that.
it was insane. I said, okay, go Robert Rodriguez. And then we get introduced to Quentin Tarantino's character, who I was saying to my dad, because me and my dad were watching this movie together, and I was saying to him, I was like, you know, Quentin Tarantino's character in this reminds me a lot of his character in From Dusk Till Dawn. Did you see that movie?
Yes, I did. I love that movie.
I love that movie. Yeah. So you know how he played that kind of like deranged rapist?
Yes, yes.
I felt like, didn't you feel like he played like the same character?
Yes, I thought it was mimicked. Yeah, I did. Yeah. The character definitely resembled the character from Dusk Till Dawn, and even the personality.
Yes, and I want to talk about this because I talk about this a lot. I think it's so interesting to talk about this. So, this movie brings up a lot of really fun points, and I'm so glad that we're covering it. So that we see everyone now realizes that Ray is a special forces black op, whatever. So they got to separate him from the rest of the group. But the boys like Cherry and Dakota, so they separate Cherry and Dakota as well. And then I think it's really interesting that they juxtaposition what's about to happen with kind of like you see the guys watching TV on these like security cameras and you see them watching an ad, and it's for an ad for something called Girls in Cages, which felt like it's like an ad for like a porno video or like website or like something. Did you get that vibe?
Yeah, I believe that's actually a movie from the 70s.
It's about, is it?
Yeah, it's about girls in prison. I forget the name of the movie, but it's a 70s movie.
Okay, so they're watching this trailer for the 70s movie, Girls in Cages, and it's very, like, graphic and it's very like demeaning. And then we cut immediately to Dakota and Cherry in captivity by these men. And we see Quentin Tarantino being like, all right, well, I'm bored. So I'm going to, in a horrifying turn of phrase, get my dick wet is what he said. And then one guy goes, well, she only has one leg. And then Quentin Tarantino goes, easier access. And then the guy, this like other soldier that he's talking to, shrugs in agreement and then follows. Horrifying exchange.
Yeah, that is definitely like probably something that would happen in the 70s and 80s.
I feel like it's something that would happen now.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Men are no better now than they were in the 70s and
the
80s.
No, but women are more like more better than they were in the 70s and 80s, if that makes any sense. They're more independent.
I mean, we see Cherry fight back. So luckily, Cherry fights back. But I think it's so interesting to me. And I know this is like, because rape is never about sex. It's always about power, right? And I understand that. And I get that. But I think it's so interesting when in a film, if violence at first does not work, he knows the next most horrifying thing that he can do is rape a woman. And I think we don't talk about it. It's like, and it's really disturbing. And you see it in this film. Quentin Tarantino's like, all right, you're not going to do what I say. I'm going to rape you. What?
Yeah, it's crazy. And like a lot of, like you see a lot of movies where they like try and justify it and go, she wanted it. You know, No,
never. And this movie, luckily you get the karma immediately. So it feels better. And this is so interesting. I was talking about doing Planet Terror and at work, and one of my crew members had said to me, you know, have you ever seen the movie Miss 45? And I said, I have not. And I looked it up. We were talking about it. And I hate when a woman's story has to come at the brutalization of her. But it does sound really interesting because I do love female revenge. But
yeah, yeah.
Back to this. I'm so sorry. So back to this. So Quentin Tarantino decides he's going to try to rape Rose McGowan, and he makes her dance. She's a little uneasy at dancing at first because she has her wooden leg and she's not used to dancing with her wooden leg. But luckily she finds her footing and stabs her wooden leg into Quentin Tarantino, his right eye. And as she does this, his mask has been off. So we find out in another cutscene that Bruce Willis and his men, first of all, killed Osama bin Laden. Just, they did that. They killed bin Laden. But because they killed bin Laden, they were exposed to this like chemical that is part of the zombie chemical. But if they slowly expose themselves to it, they can remain safe. But if they don't and they breathe normal air for a long time, they become pussy and boily and gross and disgusting. So we see that Quentin Tarantino's mask has been off of him for quite some time now. So his face starts bubbling out. He starts getting disgusting. Since his pants are already down, we see his balls and his penis start to disintegrate away or like slop off. I don't. How would you describe it?
It looked like when you do like marshmallows and you toast them and they starts getting all gooey and falling and everywhere.
It was disgusting. Yeah. So he dies, obviously. Ray comes in and now they have to escape. They have to escape the compound. And he goes, in the scene that you had been talking about, he goes, all right, I need you to be who you were meant to be. And he has fashioned a machine gun. So instead of the peg, she now has a machine gun leg.
With a rocket launcher.
With a rocket launcher. My question is, how does she fire?
They don't get into that. They really don't. She just does.
So now we are in our final battle, and they have to fight through this zombie army of Bruce Willis's military men. Bruce Willis is dead, and they realize that they can't be affected by this stuff. So they're like the cure. They're like the resistance in this like zombie world. So she launches herself into the air. There's a massive explosion. She flies over the wall and machine gun downs half of the people. We have the old go-go dancer owner flying the helicopter with the hot twins, using the blades as like a lawnmower blade and just cutting off the heads of all these zombie guys. We have a lot of big shootouts. It's really fun. High action. Ray gets shot a zillion times.
Yeah. He gets gunned down.
And then in something that I thought was so funny. So earlier in the film, Ray goes, oh, I'm so good. Like, I never miss. Like, because he's so good at, like, shooting. He goes, I never miss. And now he's talking to Cherry, and he's dying in her arms. And she goes, it's going to be two against the world. It's us. And he goes, it will be two against the world. Touches her stomach and goes, I never miss. Because as Ben was saying, they do have a sex scene. So, insane. Now, they go to the water, and the way that they talk about water and, like, the land of the water makes it seem like they've never been to the water before, but they're from Texas, which is not a landlocked country state. But they're in Mexico. They go to Mexico, and they go, so their backs are to the water, so that's, like, because that's where Ray told them to go. She's, like, their leader messiah because she has the machine gun leg, and she also has a daughter. Because, as we know, Ray never misses. So this is probably, like, the daughter looked like maybe, like, 4 or 5 months. So this is almost, like, a year and a half after.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I kept on thinking about what he was saying. I never miss. But they were in a relationship before, and I'm sure they had sex.
So he missed all the time. It was like, oh, only when you want it. It was the logic of this movie. There's actually none. There's actually nothing that makes sense about this film. But it's fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's funny. I laughed a lot of parts. I was just like, what has Kira got me watching? This is insane. Like, it was a good laugh. I liked it a lot.
It's very fun. It's pulpy. The action is insane. The dialogue is very funny. The ladies are very good looking. And if you want to see Quentin Tarantino get stabbed in the eye, I would watch it.
Oh, yeah.
And loses balls. All right. So that wraps Planet Terror. Let's pretend we were taking a brief little interlude.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Let's all go to the lobby. See, we've been to the drive-in. And now we are back with our second presentation of Death Proof. So it kind of seemed like you like Death Proof a little bit more.
It reminded me of a lot of movies I've seen before.
Right, true.
So I was like, oh, wait. You know, I was relating parts to it going, oh, this reminds me of this. And this reminds me of that. So, like, that's why. And, like, the zombie movies, I mean, that was great. Because, like, even with the helicopter part, that reminded me of Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
When he cuts the head off. So I both movies had, like, nostalgic feelings for me.
Yeah. I think Death Proof is fun. And I kind of want to talk about the settings of, like, Death Proof, because I believe, as we were talking about, that Planet Terror and Death Proof are related, right? But I believe the first half of Death Proof happened, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then Planet Terror happened. And then between when they go to the ocean, when they go to Mexico, I think that's in 14 months before the whole virus has, like, spread.
That makes sense.
What do you think?
The timelines?
Yeah, that's how I view it. And this will make more sense as we talk about it, but I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Oh, yeah. I can 100% see it. Like, it was like the Death Proof is kind of pre-apocalyptic world.
And then the
Planet Terror is the apocalyptic world.
Yeah. And then, obviously, Jungle Julia dies. R.I.P. Jungle Julia.
R.I.P.
Okay. So, Death Proof. Let's get into it. So, we know Quentin Tarantino loves feet. And the opening shot is feet on a dashboard. Insane.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on here? But I get it. I mean, he does a lot of feet shots.
He has a foot fetish. He's an interesting one, that Tarantino.
We're on to you, Quentin.
We know about you. So, funny enough, too, Rose McGowan, she is in both films, but she plays a different character in both films. Whereas the woman who played Dakota plays Dakota in both films.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, huh. That's true.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep, it is.
So they are taking place in the same world, but maybe Rose McGowan has a blonde twin.
Ooh. Plot twist.
It follows the story of Jungle Julia, and Jungle Julia is out celebrating her birthday. She is a radio DJ, kind of like local celeb. Her friend Butterfly is in town, and they have a third friend, and they're Shana. Shayna. Because if you call her Shauna, yeah, she'll be pissed.
Yeah, she's mad at Shauna.
But Shayna. And Shayna. So the three of them are going to celebrate Jungle Julia's birthday. They're talking about who they're going to invite. The boys are coming. They're going to Shayna's lake, dad's lake house later. And a very disturbing comment that she made that I don't know if this was you found unsettling. They're talking about going to the lake house and they're like, oh, well, we can't bring the boys because like my dad will know, you know, like he loves to just like stop by when like there's like a bunch of girls like going to be in bikinis. And I'm like, you're talking about your dad like sexualizing your friends. Like that's actually like in a very chill way. And that's actually very concerning.
Yeah. And then like there's a one part where the girl actually says, Butterfly says,
oh yeah, she like calls him by like his
Ben,
first.
Bob?
Yeah.
Bob? Ben?
Julia does. She goes, yeah. And she goes, well, we're adults. Yeah. Dave.
Dave. And she goes, I don't look at him as her father. I look at him as a man. I was like, what? What?
Like actually that's disturbing. I will say Robert Rodriguez had some questionable dialogue. The dialogue in this movie, even more questionable.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I was astounded at some points. but again, it does pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know who told Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez about that, but these do pass. So it makes me believe that they have talked to a woman at least once.
Yeah, it might not have been a long conversation.
might not have been a respectful conversation.
It might have been about feet.
It was definitely about feet. Okay, so we have Jungle Julia, Shayna, and Butterfly, and they are going out. So first they go to this Mexican restaurant, Gauchos, Guido's, I don't know, Guerrero's, I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Guetta's, I don't know. They go to some Mexican restaurant. And while they're there, Butterfly actually steps outside, and she sees that there's this kind of like car driving slow, kind of watching her. And it kind of puts her at like a little unease and like, if like you've ever been in a situation where you felt like someone was watching you, you know, those like instincts kind of kick in. And I think those instincts kind of kicked in for her. But she kind of like lets it slide. You know, she's just visiting Austin. She's here for her friend's birthday. Like whatever's going to happen is going to happen. So at dinner, we find out that Jungle Julia has said that anyone who approaches Butterfly and repeats a poem and buys her a drink, she should give them a lap dance or will give them a lap dance. So we don't see this happening at all throughout the night, until later, which I want to talk about that too, which I think is very interesting. So now we go to what I would assume is like the second or the third location. These girls are drinking, they're partying. We now see the boys, and one of the boys is, like I was saying, is Eli Roth. Another one of the boys is, I don't know his name, but he also was in Inglourious Basterds. He played the third guy when they were pretending to be Italian, and he was the one that was best at the Italian accent. Do you remember?
Yes, I do. I didn't know who he was, and I still don't.
Oh, okay. I forget his like actor name, but I thought that was funny. I was like, oh, I love to see like all these people working together, especially like him and Eli Roth within like that same kind of like trio with Quentin Tarantino. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting. I like when people all work together, even though when, like all these people are shitbags. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, we went over like directors that use the same casting. Yeah. Before and another one of our podcasts. And yeah, I like that too. I like that you keep the it seems like the production's better when they do that.
Yeah, and I mean, I know one thing. I know that this is. I'm sorry, I'm getting off of Quentin Tarantino for 2 seconds. Love of my life, Robert Rodriguez. I know that his actors love him because Alexa Vega, who played the Carmen in Spy Kids, actually had Robert Rodriguez walk her down the aisle when she got married.
Oh, that's awesome.
Isn't that so sweet?
That's very sweet.
I think that's so sweet. I was like, oh, I love that. Okay, so back to Quentin Tarantino. So Butterfly, they all go out and they're having fun. Jungle Julia is texting someone that she's like trying to come out. This person's like, yeah, I'm coming out. Obviously, she doesn't see it. They obviously don't come. The boys are trying to get the girls more drunk so they can go to the lake house with them in a way that I found disgusting, but I know it's how men talk about women. Like, oh, we're going to hit them with shots in a way that's not aggressive. And like you hear, you see Kurt Russell's character kind of overhearing them, and he's like in this like stuntman jacket. He drives this like cool car. We actually see that he's the one that gets out of the car that was stalking them. We see them watching him. He's watching the girls' table. Cherry goes outside for a cigarette. The guy that was in Inglourious Bastards comes out and he's like so cute. He's kind of like just like, hey, do you want to like make out? Like, I really want to make out. And she's like, we can make out for 6 minutes. Don't beg. And he's like, oh my God, I love that. Of course. I thought that was so funny. The way he's just like, I just want to make out with you.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Oh my God. I thought that was hilarious.
Yep. She's definitely like, he's the guy that she made out with before though, when they talk about in the car. Yeah. Yeah. So like, it's like someone that she makes out with and doesn't let him go any further than making out.
Yeah. And then he just like loves making out. I think it's so sweet. Oh my God. So then they're all outside. Some of their other friends have now joined. They're all smoking pot outside. Quentin Tarantino is the bar owner. He's giving them shots. They're doing shots. Everyone's dancing and drinking. Everyone's having a good time. We meet blonde Rose McGowan, who hates Jungle Julia, insinuates that she's a bitch and a slut, and blew her way to the top in a way that was astounding that you would talk to a stranger. And Kurt Russell kind of says that. He goes, like, what did she do to you? So we find out that she hates Jungle Julia. They're talking. It turns out that Kurt Russell doesn't drink. He's ordering club sodas, eating nachos in a disgusting manner, calling himself Stuntman Mike, and then drinking a virgin pina colada. Crazy.
Yeah, he was very creepy.
He was so creepy. So now he goes outside. He's smoking a cigarette. Everyone's smoking a cigarette. The girls are smoking pot. And he buys Butterfly a drink and Jungle Julia. He gives them both beers and he recites the poem and he calls her Butterfly and he asks for a lap dance. And now she's like kind of like, no, 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 no. And then he's like, okay, like, what are you, chicken shit? And then she's like, oh my God, no one's ever going to call me that. And then she obviously performs the lap dance. And then they leave. Now they leave without the boys. It's just the girls in the car. And they head to the lake house. So they're driving to the lake house. Blonde Rose McGowan asks if stuntman Mike, Kurt Russell, can give her a ride home. And he goes, yep. So he puts her in his car. Now his car is what he calls death proof because he is a stuntman. So he has to be able to smash his car up a bunch of different ways to not die. Essentially. So he's in this like little souped up safe car and she has to sit in like this glass cage box, basically. That's the passenger seat on this little like, I don't know, stool. And she's like already weirded out and she goes, okay. So she's sitting there and the girls we see take a left and he goes, okay, are you going right or left? And she goes, oh, I'm going right. And he goes, well, that's too bad. We're going left, and kind of makes it this whole game of like cat and mouse of like, oh, you should be scared. You should do this. And then he just starts driving like a crazy person and kind of just whipping her around the car.
Yeah, he was like intentionally hurting her. Like he's very sadistic.
Oh, yeah. Like evil man, to the point where he slams on the brakes. So she smashes her jaw open. And that's kind of like the final nail in the coffin. We see him speed up past the girls. The girls not paying attention to him, just kind of like dancing, having fun in the car. You know, like they're driving up to the lake house. It's their friend's birthday. And then we see him turn his car off, park on the opposite side of the road. So he's driving in the sight of the girls. Turn his car off, turn his lights off, and then he starts slowly driving towards them. Lights off, driving. So they're on the right side of the road. He's on the wrong side of the road. And then he's driving towards them, driving towards them, driving towards them. And then right before they're about to hit, he speeds up and turns his lights on so they see what happens and smashes his car into theirs, killing them. We also see that he has had photos of them, so he was stalking them. So he's kind of like this like crazy killer. And I thought it was so interesting. And I think this is how the law can fail people sometimes, is that when the sheriff is talking about it and they're talking to the doctors, they go, oh, there's nothing we can do because the girls were intoxicated and he was sober. So it looks like it was their fault. And the guy was like, no, I think it was him. I think he did this. And I think he used his car as a weapon, which I thought was really interesting. But then he's like, he's the sheriff of the town. And they goes, but my hands are tied. I can't do anything. What?
Yeah, it was like, because you said the DA said, yeah. So once the DA puts the kibosh on it, you really can't do anything. I mean, like you said, he can do private investigating. But I liked that scene with the car because like it kept on stopping and showing how each individual girl died. Like it would go show like Jungle Julia losing her leg and getting killed. And then it went stop and go back and showing like it showed each and every one of them how they died specifically.
And I thought that was really cool because it would always go back to that like gear shift and then it would start. And it was really interesting. Brutal deaths. Jungle Julia getting her leg ripped off. Crazy. The tire just smashing up Butterfly's face. Insane.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Brutal. I mean, I will say both these movies are highly, highly gory. A lot of blood.
A lot of dancing.
A lot of dancing.
A lot of dancing. We have the first one had the girl like being a go-go dancer, and then this one had the exotic dance. It was like a lot of exotic dancing.
A lot of exotic dancing. A lot of feet.
Yeah. There's feet in all this. Yep.
Yeah. A lot of ass shots. A lot of tit shots. It's filmed.
Yeah, 80s.
Yeah, it's filmed through kind of this like very voyeuristic, like grotesque male point of view that I can only assume, like I had said, is what every 13-year-old boy and how they view a woman. But also, I think they're staring at their boobs a lot because they're also 5'3". So, I don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, Ben. I don't know.
Yeah, it was very, very erotic, both films. Yep.
It was very erotic. Yeah, it was just kind of, so we have all these ladies died. He broke some of his bones, and now we see that we are 14 months later, and we have a whole new group of ladies. We got Zoe Saldana, we got Mary Louise Winstead, who I thought was so cool was Zoe Bell actually played herself, and she is a real stunt woman.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I thought that was really cool. So I really liked that. The second group of girls, very fun. So they are all either actresses or stunt women or stunt. They work on the film set. So they're all in Austin, Texas for a month. Oh, no, they're in Lebanon, Tennessee. So sorry. We are out of, this is 14 months later and we're out of Austin, Texas, and we're in Lebanon, Tennessee. So this is why I think it happens. The first half of Death Proof, the first half of Planet Terror, the disease hasn't gotten to Tennessee yet. Second half of Death Proof, Planet Terror by the water, Mexico.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah.
In my head, that's how it goes. So now we're 14 months later in Lebanon, Tennessee, and these women are all co-workers, and they all work together to film, in making a film. And they are picking their friend Zoe up because she is coming to visit, and she asks if they can take her to test drive this like very cool car that she like is in love with. It reminded me kind of Jungle Julia's car.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I think it was supposed to.
Maybe it was like the aftermath of like, you know, the guy guts the pieces and fixes it. I don't know.
I don't think it was the same car. I think it was like the same make or model or something. Yeah. Right. I don't know. They reminded me of each other. So we see them talking. We see them kind of talking about being stunt women and living life on the edge and doing all this fun stuff. It kind of seems like Kim and Zoe are the two better friends. They're kind of like the ones that have each other's back. And then we have Abernathy and Mary Louise Lee. And then we have Abernathy and Lee. So Abby and Lee. And they kind of are like kind of hanging out. Lee is the movie star. Kind of feels like she's like in her own world all the time. Kind of just like this, like, again, like women can only be two things, right? Hot and strong or hot and ditzy. Like, and you see that in Lee. Kind of like is just like la da 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 da, what's going on? Oh, you told the, like, and then you see her friends being like, oh, we're gonna go live life on the edge. Like, I just thought it was so interesting that how like these women could like have like these interesting personalities and ideas, but then at the same time be so one dimensional. Like, it just felt very like jarring. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. What was I gonna say? I was gonna say something else about this, and I just totally forgot.
Okay, yep. Well, we'll keep going with the story. So they start.
Oh, feet.
Feet.
Yes, feet in this one too.
Feet in this one.
Yes, because remember she got her feet out the window, and he like licks his finger and like touches them.
Disgusting.
Yeah, very. That's really. I was like, oh, what the hell? And like she does. She goes, oh, something. He brushed up against me, but no. He touched you. Like if someone touches me, I know they touched me.
You know when someone touches you versus brush it up against you, because one is intentional and one is an accident. So. Crazy. So he has some interactions with them. He starts following them. We see him taking photos of them, and we see him kind of stalking them. So now they're taking Zoe to test drive the car or to go look at the car. It's in perfect condition. It's a gorgeous car. It looks like it has like a brand new engine. I don't know. Gorgeous. They're all hungover from the night before, and Zoe asks Kim, she goes, hey, can we do this thing called shipmast? Can we play shipmast? And Kim's like, no. And Zoe's just like begging. And finally, Kim's like, yeah, okay, whatever, we'll do this. And they're like, okay, but we'll leave Abby and Lee as collateral so we can take the car unsupervised. And I had no idea what shipmast was going to be. Did you?
I had never heard of it before.
So to me, that was like so shocking. I was like, what is this? So I'm going to reveal Shipmaster as we reveal it, as they reveal it to us in the film. So now Abby is like kind of mad. She's like, I want to come. Like, she kind of like throws this fit being like, you guys always have fun without me. Like, you always do all this. Like, why can't I come? Why can't I have fun? Like, kind of like being like this like whiny little like whatever. And they're like, okay, fine. You can come. And then they're like, the only way that you can come is if you convince the guy to let us take the car unsupervised. And she's like, oh, I got this. So then she just is like being really nice. And then she insinuates that her friend who is asleep is a porn star. And it's like, what kind of person would do that?
And will blow him.
Exactly. And I was like, what is happening? Again, abhorrent dialogue in this film. So they, so the guy's like, oh, okay, she's hot. Yep.
Dressed like a cheerleader.
Oh, it's a porno about cheerleaders. Disgusting. Like, be more unoriginal, please. So that all happens. And now the three of them take the car out on their own. And now they are going to start playing Shipmass, which is where Zoe takes two belts and holds them on either side of the window to hold herself in and then lays on the front of the car. Like, I would assume a ship mast is, but, like, I thought, so once I started getting out, I thought she was going to stand on the roof, because I thought masts, like, went up, like, up.
Yeah, I was kind of confused by it, so.
Yeah, I was kind of confused by that part, but I was like, okay, whatever. So, I thought, so now they're playing this game, and Zoe's having a good time, Kim's, like, laughing, she's like, I got this. Abby's like, oh my god, you guys are crazy, this is so fun, I'm one of the main girls now, whatever. Everyone's having a laugh. And then we see Kurt Russell kind of like, I thought it would have been so funny if they like played the Jaws theme when he just like started like driving up like na na na, and he starts chasing them and trying to kill them, and they now enter into a high speed volatile chase, which was so fun. And I want you to talk about old car chase scenes that this reminded you of, because I felt like it paid homage to a lot of things. Vanishing Point, I think, is the one that's coming most to mind.
Yeah, I was thinking of Smoking the Bandit, the Dukes of Hazzard, like, yeah, all those type of like chase scenes and cut scenes. And yeah, it was good. Like, the chase scenes were amazing in this. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, the driving in it is so good. So now Kurt Russell is chasing them to kill them, trying to run them off the road. While Zoe is obviously on the front of the car, holding on for dear life, panicking, and her friends are like dying. Now, there is something very funny that happens earlier in the film, the conversation that happens, that they are talking about how Zoe always lands, they always call her Zoe the cat, because no matter what, she always lands on her feet. So this comes about because she falls into this like granite pit and just like walks out. So they're getting chased by Kurt Russell for quite some time, going incredibly fast. And he ends up running them off the road. And when he runs them off the road, Zoe goes flying into the into this field. And Kim and Abby are left sitting in the car just crying because they think that their friend is now dead. And then, of course, she just pops up and goes, hey, guys, I'm fine. It was so funny. And they're like, Zoe the cat. I liked that.
I thought it was funny too, especially like the way she just jumped up like so they could see her. I thought that was cute.
I thought that was so cute, and I thought it was like a really cute callback. I was really into that. Like, I didn't hate that at all. So I thought that was really fun. And then so now they're like, all right, let's in what I love, female revenge. They go, let's kill this man, and now it is their turn. So. After that, he runs them off the road. Kim does get a shot in. So Kim does shoot him in the arm, and he's acting, I would say, the Fergie treatment. How they treated Fergie's character in Planet Terror is how they treat stuntman Mike's character in Death Proof. And I love to see that same treatment of both characters. I think it's such an interesting choice to have your characters completely revert themselves, though, right?
Yeah, I saw like predators like that, like when they actually get hurt or are confronted, become cowards. Mm-hmm. Like, so like I related that. I was like, oh, I can see this, you know, because now he's the victim. He's the victim. You know, they like to victimize till they become the victim.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And he does. So he gets shot and he's just like, I guess now he drinks. So he's just chugging whiskey and like pouring on his wound and just crying. And now the girls are terrorizing him. They are driving insanely. Kim's pushing it. She's like, I'm going to kill this dude. They go crazy, right? Run him off the road. He's hanging out of the car, screaming, crying, begging, pleading for his life. And then they drag him out. And then just like in one of the funniest sequences I've seen, just take turns just beating the shit out of him.
Yeah, they hit him a lot.
They hit him a lot. And then they like bash his face in. Like they have a pole that they take. Like these women are brutal. Love to see it though. And that's actually how the movie ends.
Yeah, yeah. She does a thing with her heels and smashes his face in.
She like takes, so she like raises her leg and like smashes her heel like in front of her body into him. Kind of like the we see this again in Kill Bill. Well, I think we see it first in Kill Bill. I do believe Kill Bill came out first.
Yeah, like I totally related to that scene. I was like, wait a minute, I've seen that before. So like I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was a fun movie. Okay, so what did you think of the Grindhouse double feature?
I thought they were both hysterical in different ways. Each one had a different property that they brought to the table. I didn't know they went together. So like now that I see it, I did when they said Jungle Julia on the radio, I was like, oh, wait a minute. So I did kind of relate it to that movie. So but like now I'm knowing that they both went together. I can see it. And yeah, they were good. I'd watch them again.
Yeah, they're fun. Treatment of women is questionable, though. So go on.
Feet.
Booty, boobies.
Stereotypes.
But it passes the Bechdel test. These women do talk about things other than men. So that is, I mean, shocking for the way that their characters are treated. It is super fun, though. You can watch it on, where did you watch it?
Tubi.
Or Stars, you can watch it. You can obviously rent it. And check out all the trailers. And then maybe check out the movies. Definitely check out Machete. Check out Thanksgiving. Check out Machete Kills. It's very fun. We got some really fun things planned up on the horizon. So always stay listening, stay active, write in. I know we haven't done any foreign films in a while, so I think we're going to try to dive back into that a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to talk after we get off the air about doing some foreign films.
Yeah, because we've been kind of America-centric for a while, so we're going to branch back out. But like, subscribe, write, share, post, I don't know.
Tell people
what if you watch these movies and you got something different, like please let me know. Tell me your favorite Tarantino films. Tell me your favorite Robert Rodriguez films. I love seeing this duo work together. I think their styles really play well off of each other. I like Robert Rodriguez more. I have said this, but I do think that Quentin Tarantino is people like him more, which is interesting.
He's got more of a fan base, I'd say.
I would say, but I love Robert Rodriguez. If you guys haven't, check out all his movies. Start with Machete, start with Spy Kids, start with The Faculty. Watch From Dusk Till Dawn.
I love Dusk Till Dawn.
I love From Dusk. Oh, talk about a great vampire movie.
Yeah. Funny thing, I was working at a Pizza Hut and they had the soundtrack on there. And a little kid pushed it and it was the pot. It says, pussy. And like, we had to shut the machine off so fast.
Oh my God, my literal worst nightmare. That would be. That is so funny though.
It was, but it wasn't.
It was, but it's funny now. Yeah. Not in the moment. But yeah, so thank you guys. As always, it's been a pleasure. And catch us next time on What's Happening.